sent from God, whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of the light. That was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 6 through 9. Worship and Warfare, Holy Places and In His Hands. 3 Praise and Worship CDs now available through Voice of Many Waters Ministry. Call 1-800-205-6245 or check it out on the web, www.voiceofmanywaters.org. Each CD is $15 plus $3.50 shipping and handling. Call 1-800-205-6245 or www.voiceofmanywaters.org.
I'm here at the American Freedom Network, and with us this morning is Peter Lance. And Peter Lance is an investigative reporter. He has all sorts of degrees. He's written a number of fascinating books, but one of his latest books is Triple Cross. It's the story of probably one of the most important people in the whole story of 9/11, of the bombing of the American embassy in Kenya and Tanzania back in 1999, because he was the man who planned it all. At least he planned the bombings of the American embassies. But no one knows where he is. He is in the custody of the American government. Is he in prison somewhere? Is he in protective custody somewhere as a protected witness? Who is Ali Mohammed? Where is Ali Mohammed? Of course, to answer that question this morning is Peter Lance. His book, Triple Cross, the people working within the government have done everything they could to suppress one gentleman who is formerly high up in the FBI, has done everything he could to prevent the publication or republication of this book. So without further ado, good morning, Peter. How are you?
Dr. Stan, it's always great to be with you. How are you today?
I'm doing just great, and I want you to sort of, you give the whole story. I'll just sit here and listen.
Okay, thank you. This is an epic story that goes back to the murder of Anwar Sadat, the Egyptian president, in 1981. As you know, in the middle of this book, there's a 32-page illustrated timeline, and those of your listeners who have access to a computer can go now to my website, which is peterlance.com, P-E-T-E-R, lance.com, and you can download a 32-page PDF of this story, and you'll see that the murder of Anwar Sadat was done by a series of Egyptian radical army officers, and those officers had in their unit a guy named Ali Mohammed. Now, he never was arrested for that death. Why? Because he was at Fort Bragg, North Carolina at the time on an officer exchange program. However, after the murder of Sadat, they arrested two key figures in Egypt who were part of the plot. One was the blind sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, who later would go on to be the principal Al-Qaeda spiritual icon in America, and another individual called Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri. Now, again, these are complicated names, but if you go to peterlance.com and download, in the upper right corner of my homepage, you'll see this little picture of this timeline. You can follow along in this incredible story that it reads, Dr. Stan, like a Clancy novel, only it's true.
Well, anyway. Al-Zawahiri actually became the number two man in Al-Qaeda. Rahman, the blind sheikh, was allowed to come to the United States, a known Islamic terrorist involved with the murder of Sadat, is allowed to come to the
right.
United States and work in this mosque there in New York. Al-Zawahiri
right.
is allowed to come here after he's one of the organizers of Al-Qaeda, 1995,
right.
travel all over the United States, raising funds for Al-Qaeda. Why would we let known terrorists into the country? And these were known terrorists? You go right ahead.
Well, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions about this. The 9/11 Commission did a whitewash. If you read my second book, Cover Up, I detailed how the 9/11 Commission was half the staff were made up of the very agencies that were charged with protecting us that failed. And one of the most, you just point out a very astonishing discovery in my book, Al-Zawahiri. He's the guy that every other time there's a fatwa from Al-Qaeda, he's bin Laden's number two guy hiding out with bin Laden, and he was allowed to come into this country, slipped into the country, and Ali Muhammad took him on a tour of mosques to raise money for the jihad. How did that happen?
Ali Muhammad was working for the FBI at the time, wasn't he?
Ali Muhammad was an FBI informant from 1992 on. He slipped past a watch list. He actually infiltrated a mosque in Hamburg on behalf of the CIA in 1984, gets on a plane into America, even though his name is on a watch list, mysteriously gets past the list, meets an American woman named Linda Sanchez on the flight in, seduces her, and gets married at a drive-through wedding chapel in Reno, Nevada, 6 weeks later. He's now in Silicon Valley, where he sets up a sleeper cell, and he actually, Dr. Stan, enlists in the U.S. Army, where he becomes a sergeant. And where does he end up? At the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare School at Fort Bragg, where the elite Green Beret and Delta Force officers train, the best of the best. And on weekends, he's coming up to New York, where he trains, listen to this, the original World Trade Center bombing cell, the cell behind the so-called Day of Terror plot to blow up the bridges and tunnels into Manhattan, the Egyptian El Sayed Nasser, who kills Rabbi Meir Kahane in 1990. He is the Zelig of Terror, and he's been, from I show in my book from 92 on, he's working as an FBI informant on the West Coast.
And remember, of course, the bombing of the World Trade Center, the first bombing, was 1993, so... I mean, when you begin to put all these things together, you say, what's the FBI doing? But go right ahead.
Yeah, what is the FBI doing? And I think that, you know, you alluded to the big headline on this book. This book, for 20 months, Patrick Fitzgerald, the U.S. attorney in Chicago, for 20 months tried to keep this book from seeing the light of day. He sent 32 pages of letters to my publisher, HarperCollins, threatening to sue for libel. Now, who is Patrick Fitzgerald? Your listeners will know who he is. He's the U.S. attorney in Chicago. He is the special counsel in the CIA leak investigation. He's the guy that put Judith Miller, the New York Times reporter, away for 85 days. He subpoenaed her phone records in another case. He is a hugely powerful federal prosecutor, probably the most intimidating federal prosecutor in America. And he sent his first letter, October 11th of 07. Mike Publisher rejected him. And you can download these letters at peterlance.com. You can see how much time this guy spent trying to kill this book. They reject him. And what does he do? He sends his next letter, faxing it from the office of the U.S. attorney, as if to send a message to my publisher and me to chill us. So out of an abundance of caution, if this had been Patrick Smith or John Doe, we never would have, this book would have been published, you know, long ago. But because of who he was, we literally revetted this entire book, Dr. Stan, and it came out June 16th.
We'll be back again in just a moment here. The American Freedom Book, the book Triple Cross by Peter Lance, now in softback. Fascinating read. I recommend it to you.
Good news. The March of Faith Ministries presents Pastor Samuel Santos. Come and hear Pastor Santos, the man who died twice. In a 22-year span, he has been in 3 airplane accidents. 19 years ago, he fell on the ice and lost his memory totally. Doctors told his wife because of his age, he would never be normal again. This testimony can make a great impact in your life. In the last 15 years, Brother Santos has been used by God in a mighty way in the communist country of Cuba, establishing Bible schools all over that country. In the last 2 years, 2008 and 2009, he graduated 2,638 students. Pastor Santos will be speaking at the Berthoud Community Center, 248 Welch Avenue, at 7:30 p.m. June 5th and 6th. The Johnstown Town Hall at 101 Charlotte Avenue, 7:30 p.m. June 12th and 13th. At the Milliken Town Hall, 1101 Broad Street, 7:30 p.m. June 19th to 20th. And in the town of Meade, 441 3rd Street, June 26th and 27th. For more information, call 303-883-5674. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of the light. That was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 6 through 9.
Well, stand back here. I guess Peter Lance's book, Triple Cross, an amazing story about an amazing man, probably one of the key figures in everything going on today. And the question is, where is Ali Muhammad? No one knows. No one can find out. And, of course, is he in prison someplace? He's not in the maximum prison where all the other terrorists are, and yet here's the man who planned the bombing of our embassies and the American embassies in Tanzania and in Kenya. 21 people killed, 5,000 people injured, and this man is not in maximum security? What's it all about? You pick up the story, Peter.
Well, we don't. The problem, Dr. Stan, is we don't know where he is. He could be in a maximum security prison. We don't know whether he's in the supermax with the blind sheikh or where blind sheikh was, Ramzi Youssef was. We just don't know. If you go to the Bureau of Prisons website, you can usually find out where any prisoner in the system is. But Ali Muhammad has seals upon seals on his case. He is the greatest enigma in the war on terror. And when Patrick Fitzgerald, this is just one example of what I have in this book with regard to Patrick Fitzgerald. But you have to understand, I want to go back to emphasize, this is a very small universe of hunters and hunted. If you go to the beginning of Triple Cross, my book, you will see that there is a very small number of hunters, like as in the feds, with Patrick Fitzgerald kind of leading the charge, a number of agents in the New York office of the FBI, what's called Squad I-49. From January 96, they were charged by President Clinton with getting an indictment of Osama bin Laden. And so they, and one of them named Jack Clunan, was the guy who went back to find out who Ali Muhammad really was, okay? And then you have a very limited number of people in Al-Qaeda from bin Laden and al-Zawahiri down. So, and this is the New York office of the FBI. It's not the Wichita, Kansas office. So you've got very small number of hunters and hunted. And Patrick Fitzgerald, first of all, in 1995, he and his partner, Andrew McCarthy, prosecuted the blind sheikh and 11 others in what was called the Day of Terror plot to blow up the bridges and tunnels. Now, there were 172 unindicted co-conspirators on a list of those men. Osama bin Laden was on the list. Ali Muhammad was on the list. Another individual named Muhammad Jamal Khalifa was on the list. He's the brother-in-law of bin Laden. I point out in my book that the system worked, Dr. Stan. Muhammad Jamal Khalifa was arrested in late 1994, coming into California, into a town where Ali Muhammad's control agent lived, a guy named John Zen, if you can call him a control agent. And in Morgan Creek, California, they were right near that area. The FBI arrested this guy, Khalifa. He had a PDF, a Newton little personal data carrier with him that had information going all the way back to the blind sheikh in the New York cell, the Manila cell of Ramzi Youssef, which was then, at that moment, planning the planes as missiles operation. So the FBI gets this individual, right, and they have him in custody. He's like a one-man little 9/11 commission. And what do they do? Jamie Gorelick, who's then deputy attorney general, moves to get him out of the country to go back to Jordan because the Jordanians wanted him. Why? Why would she do this? Why take this guy who's this principal, the brother-in-law of Osama bin Laden, and get him out of the country? And she pushed for this, and then she ended up creating this thing called the Wall Memo, which separated all the agents who were working on T-34 future acts of terror to prevent them, and those agents who were going back, like Clunan, to look at the past crimes of al-Qaeda, literally divided the brain of the FBI. Why would she do this? Well, Jamie Gorelick, remember her? She ended up as one of the 10 9/11 commissioners.
Yeah.
So shows you the absolute whitewash and failure of accountability. So here I am, Peter Lance comes along, a journalist, and doing what my job is, to hold these people accountable, right? I put this book together, and Patrick Fitzgerald, who meets Ali Mohammed in person in Sacramento, California, in 1997, in the fall of 97, he meets Ali Mohammed, and he says to Ali Mohammed, he wants to try and turn him. You know, he naively thinks that he can turn Ali Mohammed, right? So Ali Mohammed is in a restaurant in Sacramento, and he looks at Patrick Fitzgerald and he says, I don't need a fatwa or religious decree to attack America. I love bin Laden. I have a number of agents like sleepers that I can make operational at any time, and basically thumbs his nose at this great federal prosecutor, okay? Well, Patrick Fitzgerald, as Ali Mohammed leaves, turns to these two agents, and I interviewed Jack Clunan on tape with his permission. This is a verbatim quote. Fitzgerald says, that is the most dangerous man I've ever met. We cannot leave him on the street, right? Which is true. He shouldn't have. But what does he do? He leaves him on the street for another 10 months, only to have the bombs go off in Africa, the plot that you mentioned, killing like 220, injuring thousands in Tanzania and Kenya. And that plot began in 1993. A year after Ali Mohammed became an FBI informant, he went to Africa to take the pictures that bin Laden pointed to in 94 and said, that's where I want the bombs to go off. How do we know this happened? We know it because Ali Mohammed in the year before, in 1993, was captured. Again, the system worked, Dr. Stan. I told you about the Khalifa, and then the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Mounties, arrested, effectively brought Ali into custody in Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia, as he was trying to smuggle an al-Qaeda terrorist named Marzouk into the country. The system worked. So they sweated him. They interrogated him for many hours. At the end, he said, he wrote a name down on a piece of paper. He said, call this. He'll vouch for me. Who was it? John Zent, his FBI control agent, vouches for Ali, only to have Ali get out of custody and go on to do this embassy bombing plot. So Patrick Fitzgerald waits a month to arrest Ali Mohammed after the bombs go off, and he then holds him on a John Doe warrant in secret in the Southern District of New York on the MCC, the federal jail, and Ali Mohammed basically, he cuts a deal with him to avoid the death penalty. Now, when you cut a deal with somebody to avoid the death penalty, if you're a federal prosecutor, you get something in return, don't you? Isn't that the way, what a deal is? It's a promise for a promise. And in for example, Sammy the Bull Gravano, the number two to John Gotti, he killed 19 people and he only got 5 years, but they got a deal with him and he became their star witness and he put dozens of mobsters away. Well, Ali Mohammed, when Patrick Fitzgerald was getting ready for the African Embassy bombing case in the year 2000, February, 2001, months before 9/11, Ali Mohammed never shows up on the stand. He remains the greatest enigma in the war on terror. Peter Lance put this book together, peterlance.com, my website. Go there. You'll get the timeline for Triple Cross, and you'll see why Patrick Fitzgerald, maybe, I can't get into his mind, Dr. Stan, but this incredible federal prosecutor who has indicted the governor of Illinois and convicted Conrad Black, billionaire, convicted Governor Ryan, convicted many terrorists over the years, he wants to bury this book so that the public, I believe, you know, won't know these lapses in his resume that I documented in the book.
Well, it is an incredible story, and you follow this Ali Mohammed. He was certainly there in New York, you know, working with this little Islamic terrorist cell who were responsible for the First Trade Center bombing back in 1993. And these people, the FBI was watching all the people there. They were going up every weekend or almost every weekend to a training range where they were fighting and firing of weapons, and the FBI was filming them. This is the incredible thing. They knew all about them prior to the 1993 bombing, World Trade Center bombing. They knew all about them and about so many of these Islamic terrorist cells here in the United States right up till September 11, 2001. In fact, there was a wonderful movie, I don't know if you ever saw it, Peter, called Jihad in America, that was actively suppressed in America, could not be shown. It was allegedly released in 1994, could not be shown until the year 2001, that showed the members of this cell at the rifle range, you know, before they blew up the World Trade Center the first time. Why didn't the FBI intervene?
Good question. They shut down that initial investigation. We're coming up on the 20th anniversary of that Calverton surveillance. It was the rifle range on Calverton, Long Island, half an hour above the Hamptons in the middle of the summer season, July of 89. And this is when Bush's father was in the White House. The best of the best, the special operations group from the same group that ultimately got John Gotti, these guys followed a group, what they call MEs, which is FBI speak for Middle Eastern men. They followed them from a shooting range from this El Farouk Mosque. The Blind Sheikh, by the way, had three mosques in New York. The El Farouk, and he had one in New Jersey City that I'm going to get to in a minute called the Al Salam, the ironically named Mosque of Peace. And it's an important story we need to discuss about a place called Sphinx Trading relating to that. But the FBI have these guys on their radar. Not only that, but Lou Napoli and John Antisev are two of the hapless, bumbling players in this story. Lou Napoli was an NYPD detective assigned to the Joint Terrorism Task Force. John Antisev was one of their, quote, elite agents. His brother's also an FBI agent. And these two guys were on to a guy named Mahmoud Abu Alima. Now, again, if your listeners have computers, you can go online, go to peterlance.com, download this 32-page timeline, and two or three pages in, you start to see this red-headed Egyptian guy named Abu Lima. He's 6'2". They said he had Crusaders' blood. They used to joke him because he had red hair, meaning the blood from the time the Crusaders came down to the Middle East. And Abu Lima was photographed at Calvert, Long Island. He was one of the getaway drivers the night Rabbi Kahane was murdered, 1990. That's the second dot on the chart. And Abu Lima and Salema had enough, Antisev and Napoli had enough probable cause to get a warrant to search his apartment, posing as Con Edison workers. They later would follow him to shooting ranges throughout, not just the Calverton range, but a shooting range in Connecticut. And I want to point out, if your listeners, again, they can go to my website on the homepage, there's a, below the timeline, there's a little thing that says top secret, and it's crossed out, and these are formerly top secret documents from the FBI and other agencies. But one of them, Appendix 2, which is in the back of the book, Dr. Stantz, page 579 in this new edition, it's an astonishing FBI 302. These are memos that are basically written in anticipation that they might see the light of day. And this one was from Lou Napoli, dated November 13, 1990, talking about a surveillance at a place called the High Rock Shooting Range in Connecticut. And he talks about Raymond Materza, and how he followed these guys, and they were firing literally thousands of rounds a weekend with handguns and other weapons at the shooting range. Well, Raymond Materza and his brother ended up on a list, that same unindicted co-conspirators list that I told you about from 19... That memo is 90, right?
I just said November 13th, 1990.
5 years later, Patrick Fitzgerald and Andrew McCarthy, when they're prosecuting the Blind Sheikh, they put the Materza brothers on this list of unindicted co-conspirators, along with Osama bin Laden and Ali Mohammed. So they had to know who the Materza brothers were. And yet, why didn't they stop these guys? Why didn't they indict them? Why would they name? Why wasn't Ali Mohammed named in the indictment? And in fact, Andy McCarthy, who has viciously attacked me, wrote a book called Willful Blindness, spent 20 pages attacking me, calling me everything from an irresponsible journalist up and down the line. Doesn't lay a glove on me factually. But Andy McCarthy, the night my book Triple Cross came out, and I was on the O'Reilly Factor, November 21st of 06, right? This is a book that had only been in the stores a few hours, had not gone out for prior review, so he couldn't have read it, 604 pages. McCarthy issued a statement to the O'Reilly Factor saying, Peter Lance, this book is scurrilously presented. He relies entirely on the word of convicted terrorists and murderers, okay? This is McCarthy, Fitzgerald's partner, who's supposed to be a federal prosecutor, chooses words carefully. He flies to California, Dr. Stan, in December of 94. Who does he meet with? Ali Mohammed, face to face. And Ali Mohammed says, I'm running a scuba diving business in Kenya. That's what he tells McCarthy. And McCarthy naively, apparently, believes him and doesn't arrest him.
I think, Peter, if they're attacking you, it means you're doing something right. Because they have to discredit people who tell the American people the truth. We'll be right back with Peter Lance. We owe him a debt of gratitude.
Just a good old boy.
Hi, I'm Eric Cederstrup. For over a decade, I've been the CEO, shipping clerk, and janitor of the Patriot Trading Group. And in that time, I've made friends with tens of thousands of like-minded individuals all over this country, most like me, trying to raise a family, run a business, and make sense out of a world gone mad. I'm proud of the fact that through stock bubbles, housing bubbles, and financial chaos, our customers are prospering and doing very well. By keeping our prices fair and our service fast, we find that 80% of our customers not only reorder, but they tell their friends. Don't be fooled by hype and high pressure. Do business with a company you can trust. Call the Patriot Trading Group at 1-800-951-0592 or check out our website at allamericangold.com. You'll be treated with honesty and respect. You have my word on it. I'm Eric Cederstrom, CEO, shipping clerk, and janitor.
Taking your way, the only way they know how.
Vera Survival is your one-stop shop for all your family preparedness needs. Vera Survival carries high-quality, long-term, storable food from Mountain House with a 25-year shelf life. Come by and pick up some high-quality, organic, bulk grains like wheat, quinoa, corn, and barley. Filter your drinking water through the world-famous British Birkfeld water filtration system and reduce or remove bacteria, chlorine, parasites, sediment, and rust for the best-tasting water for pennies a day. Pick up a 3-day kit from Survivor Industries for the car. Bear Survival also carries a huge selection of hard-to-find books from Paladin Press and Desert Publications. Bear Survival is located at 3366 South Broadway, 3 blocks north of Hamden in Inglewood. Call Bear Survival at 1-866-781-0343 or on the web, www.fserve.com. Prepare your family. Visit Bear Survival today.
Bill of Rights, Article 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of a religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Article 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed.
For over 15 years, K&K Premium Carpet and Upholstery Care has provided not just clean carpet, but a healthy carpet. Bonded and insured, K&K has brought quality care to your home with a proven safe truck-mounted hot water extraction process that is pH-balanced, allergen-free, and safe for the environment. Tile, grout, heat transfers, and water damage care also available. For your free estimate, call K&K Premium Carpet and Upholstery, 303-237-4655. Ask about the K&K discount on your first cleaning. That's 303-237-GO-KK.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Freedom Network, our guest this morning, Peter Lance, his book, Triple Cross. Peter, would you like to get your website out? Tell people where they can get the book.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. The website is peterlance.com, Peter, L-A-N-C-E, .com. And what I would love to have happen is if every, even if 5% of your listeners, you have a vast audience, and if 5% of your listeners bought this book, which you can get on Amazon for like $11.55, not only would you be educating yourself and getting an extraordinary read, it reads like a Clancy novel, only it's true, so you would not be disappointed in the read, But you'd be educating yourself and so that we can protect our country and our families from this Al-Qaeda threat. And you would most importantly be sending a message to any government official in this country. For $11.55, you can send a message to any government official that you cannot try and suppress public debate. You cannot kill the news media. You cannot try and kill a book. You can't keep a reporter from trying to find the truth. That is at the heart of our democracy. Patrick Fitzgerald took an oath as the U.S. attorney to uphold the Constitution. And there's an amendment. It happens to be the First Amendment to the Constitution, which says there should be no law prohibiting freedom of speech in the press. I'm a member of the press. That's what I do. And if your listeners would go to Peter Land, and I'm not asking anybody to buy this, as they say, a pig in a poke. I'm asking your listeners to sample the goods. Go to peterlance.com, download the 32-page timeline in the upper right corner. Go below that, download the formerly top-secret documents. There's, on the left side, there's a picture of Dan Rather, who did a couple of stories on my book in the year 2003. And below that are their FBI 302 memos from this extraordinary treasure trove of evidence that was gathered, believe it or not, by a mafia informant in 1996. He was in a jail cell in between Ramzi Youssef, who's the original Trade Center bomber and the true architect of 9/11. He's in between him and another individual called Abdul Hakim Murad. And Murad was going to be the original pilot. He was trained in four U.S. flight schools, North Carolina, Texas, New York, and California. He was going to be, Dr. Stan, the original Muhammad Atta to fly the planes, you know, into the Pentagon, the Trade Center, et cetera. So you get those 302s, download them, look at them, and then when you see the depth of my research, go and pay $11.55 on Amazon. I think it's another dollar on Barnes & Noble. Or go, I encourage people to go to their local bookseller, because I'd rather have people buy a book there. But not all bookstores have this. You know, as I said, a very powerful federal prosecutor sought to suppress this book. When I went to try and buy it in Santa Barbara, where I live, I couldn't find it in either Barnes & Noble or Borders, either store. Now, fortunately, it's starting to, the story is starting to get out, and you can get the book, but I guarantee you can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble overnight, virtually, if you get it. And if your listeners do that at peterlance.com, they will send a message that it's, you just can't try and kill a book. You can't bury the truth.
No, but they'll sure do everything they can, and still, Ali Muhammad's name is not well known, and it should be. He is key to almost everything going on today, and the question is, where is Ali Muhammad? Our number is 970-689-8255, 970-689-8255. Give us a call if you have a question for Peter. Fascinating individual dedicated to getting the truth out. Done a wonderful job on the story of Ali Muhammad. And certainly you mentioned in our previous conversation that his wife still sees him from time to time. Will she tell you, though, where she sees him?
No, she won't say anything about him. She still loves him, though. That's one of the most amazing things. It's an indicative of Ali's seductive powers. I mean, first of all, he's a very handsome individual. She was an older woman. I'd never met her, but I'd spoken to her on the phone multiple times. The first one to get an interview with her. And the way he seduced her, he was on this flight coming in, a TWA flight. And she said that he was sitting next to her, and obviously in coach, not in first class. And she had been on vacation in Greece. She lived in California. They were flying into JFK. And he got up from his seat, and he kind of turned, letting her obviously see his full figure. And he had his cargo pants on, and he reached in, and he pulled out a little booklet, and he started making notes in a strange language. And it was a crossword puzzle, and he was doing it in Arabic. And that's how he broke the ice with her, and she asked him about it, and they started talking. And she said, oh, I'm very sorry, you're Egyptian, I'm very sorry about President Sadat being assassinated. And right away he said, oh no, Sadat was a very bad man. So he began to start to, you know, get under her skin right away. And again, they're married 6 weeks later at a drive-through wedding chapel in Reno, Nevada. Now, well, I mentioned earlier about Sphinx trading, Dr. Stan. Do I have a few minutes to talk about that?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay. One of the most astonishing things that I revealed in this book that I think should have been on the front page of the New York Times when the book came out has to do with this a check-cashing mailbox store in Jersey City called Sphinx Trading. And before I tell you the actual story, I want to tell you how I found the story, because of all the things I'm proud of and all the research I've done, I'm most proud of how I made this discovery, because all of the cases that I alluded to, that how the war on terror was originally fought as a series of legal cases, there were two World Trade Center bombing trials, one in 94, one in 97. There was this Day of Terror trial in 95 that Fitzgerald and McCarthy prosecuted. There was the so-called Bojinka trial in 96 of Ramzi Youssef, involving a plot to put explosive devices on planes as they came into America, not the 9/11 plot, separate from that. Then there was this African embassy bombing plot in 01. There were 40,000 pages of transcripts in those cases that I read initially when I wrote my first book, A Thousand Years of Revenge. But because, if you remember, I told you Nasser, the killer of Kahani, was tried as a lone gunman. He was tried in New York, in the state court of New York, in the Supreme Court. And so I had never gotten the transcript. So just to get the transcript of that case, it not only cost me $2,500, but I had to literally go and find the three separate stenographers who had worked on it. I put the transcript together. I was reading it. And one day my jaw dropped because I saw Nasser, just a tiny reference, has a mailbox at 2929 Kennedy Boulevard in Jersey City.
No, Nasser was the one who actually killed Kahani, wasn't he?
Right, he's the janitor, Egyptian, who killed Meir Kahani.
And of course, Meir Kahani was killed because he was an Israeli patriot who was saying, you know, we cannot live in peace with the Palestinians. I mean, God gave the Jewish people the land, and we're going to have to take a strong stand. And so the Muslims had him killed, but it was part of a much larger plot, and they covered up for all of that. And they didn't even convict the guy who shot him in cold blood of murder. That was the incredible thing. What did they get him for? Some minor? What was it?
Yeah, they got him. They got him for like a minor, like a handgun possession charge and other lesser charges. But they didn't get him initially. Now later, Patrick Fitzgerald did succeed in convicting him in the Day of Terror plot for the whole, in the larger conspiracy. But here's the thing, okay? I'm going along, and I looked at this Sphinx Trading. Now, Sphinx is important because all around Bin Laden, al-Zawahiri, Muhammad Atef, who supposedly does, I'll finish the story after the break.
Okay, fine. We'll be right back here with Peter Lance, the American Freedom Network.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343. Sick of playing the guessing game with your vitamins? Tired of paying hundreds or even thousands of dollars for supplements that may or may not work? If you're a professional athlete or just looking for nutritional peace of mind, look no more, because you've found BioSuperfood, the next generation in supplementation. 100% natural BioSuperfood packs all your essential proteins, vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, enzymes, and many of nature's special forces you need for optimum health. Call BioAge at 877-288-9116, 877-288-9116.
This is George Flynn of SelfDefenseGuns.com. Our concealed carry classes meet the training requirements to obtain a Colorado or Wyoming concealed carry permit, as well as non-resident Utah and Florida. We feel very strongly that ladies should exercise their right to carry and protect themselves and their loved ones. That's why our Annie Oakley special allows any student to bring a lady to our classes for free. Visit SelfDefenseGuns.com or call 970-622-2091. That's 970-622-2091.
Article 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
Well, Dr. Stan, here at the American Freedom Network, our guest, Peter Lance. Peter, you were telling us about this whole plot. Go ahead and pick up the story.
Okay, so around bin Laden, all of the principals in al-Qaeda are Egyptian. Al-Zawahiri, who we talked about, a guy named Mohammed Atef, who supposedly was killed in the invasion of Afghanistan, the blind sheikh, Ali Mohammed, and there's an individual named Shalabi. Shalabi was a principal member of the original network that helped to fund al-Qaeda. The original network was, and this goes back to how all this happened, during the war against the Soviets, which was considered the good war, where we, you know, helped the Mujahideen, they were called, the, quote, freedom fighters in Afghanistan. We supplied the U.S. through the CIA $3 billion in aid at least, and the Saudis matched it dollar for dollar to defeat the Russians, and they were defeated in 1989, February. Well, it turns out that these individuals, bin Laden, al-Zawahiri, they turned on us. They turned their guns on America eventually, and they formed this group, al-Qaeda, in 1988. In al-Qaeda, the name al-Qaeda means base, but it really means database, because the database was the list of names of all the what they call Afghan Arabs from all over the world, from the Philippines, blue-eyed Chechens, black South Africans that came to fight against the Soviets. They kept the list, and that became the worldwide al-Qaeda network. Now, the money that was raised over the years to fund them through many mosques in America was called done through what's called the MAK, the Office of Services for the Mujahideen. The head of that was called Abdullah Azam, a scholar, and he wanted, after the Soviets left, to use the money exclusively to set up a Taliban-like government in Afghanistan. But the Egyptians around bin Laden wanted it for the worldwide jihad so they could use some of it to knock off Mubarak in Egypt. So what do they do? November, I think, of 1989, Abdullah Azam and his sons are on their way to Juma, Friday prayers, when their car blows up, dead. Now, who do you think did that? It certainly wasn't the Israelis. It was Osama bin Laden and company, although no one's ever proven it. They suddenly now have control of this worldwide network. And where do you think the main office of this network is in the United States? The Al-Farouq Mosque in Brooklyn. And when Al-Zawahiri, who has the Egyptian Islamic Jihad, moves to form this group al-Qaeda with bin Laden, that becomes their clubhouse, Dr. Stan. That's the first place Ramzi Youssef went to the night he flew into John F. Kennedy Airport in 92 to build a bomb under the Trade Center. And that's the same place that the feds followed these men from in 1989, several years before. So now cut to Peter Lance's investigation, Jersey City, mailbox store, 1990. Killer of a world figure has a mailbox there. Now you go to the next dot. Remember I kept talking earlier about this list of unindicted co-conspirators Patrick Fitzgerald and McCarthy put together with the name bin Laden on the list and al-Zawahiri. I'm not al-Zawahiri, but bin Laden, Khalifa, Muhammad. Guess who's on that list? Waleed al-Noor, Waleed A. Noor. If you go to buy the book from peterlance.com, you can, I think, even download this list of unindicted co-conspirators. You'll see Waleed A. Noor is on the list. Who's he? He's the co-founder of Sphinx Trading. So that means that Fitzgerald in 1995, five years after they know that the killer of a world figure, Kahane, has a mailbox, now Fitzgerald, at least the general, the emerging general in the war on terror, knows that this the co-founder of Sphinx is significant enough to put on a list with bin Laden. Where do you think, Dr. Stan, two of the 9/11 hijackers get their fake IDs in July of 01, months before 9/11? Where do you think they got their fake IDs?
Did they get them from Molly?
They got them at Sphinx. Well, they got them at Sphinx Trading from the partner of Waleed al-Noor, Mohammed al-Atras. And I found the certificate of incorporation. It's one of my proudest achievements. I got the certificate of incorporation that this place was incorporated in 1987. Okay, this is a year before the formation of al-Qaeda. And this little mailbox check cashing store happens to be in the same building as the blind sheikh's Jersey Mosque, the Al-Salam that I mentioned earlier. And Patrick Fitzgerald and McCarthy called it the Jersey Jihad Office, when they did the Day of Terror case. So, two of the 9/11 hijackers, Al-Mandir and Al-Hazmi, who flew American Airlines Flight 77 into the Pentagon on that awful day that killed so many Americans, they got their fake IDs at Sphinx Trading. That's the third dot. So here's what I say to Patrick Fitzgerald. Why, Patrick, if you are the head of organized crime and terrorism, the unit in the Southern District, if you were the general at that point in the war on terror, seeking an indictment of bin Laden, etc., why, in the year 2001, did you not monitor Sphinx Trading? Why did you not monitor it from 1990 on, or at least monitor it from 1995, when you knew that the co-owner was important enough to put on a list with Ali Mohammed and bin Laden? And why didn't you apply 10% of the energy that the FBI applied to following John Gotti, monitoring the Ravenite Social Club in Little Italy? If you remember John Gotti, they tried three times unsuccessfully to convict him. Finally, the fourth time they convicted him. How do they do it? By putting a microphone in an apartment above his social club in Little Italy. But for years, Dr. Stan, night and day, they did surveillance around the clock of that social club, and every single Sicilian American or mob member that came in and out of that place was photographed. And that's good. I'm glad they did that. I'm glad they applied those resources to bringing down the Teflon Don. But if they had applied those resources to Al-Qaeda and Sphinx Trading, the towers would be standing in Lower Manhattan as God is my judge. And I want you to know about a conversation I had with Nick Pileggi. Nick Pileggi is this incredible journalist, knows more about the mafia than anybody. He wrote the book that became the movie Goodfellas. He wrote the film Casino. You know, he's an expert on the mob, okay, journalist. And he's a friend of mine. And I said to him, Nick, I want to ask you something. If you look at all the terrible things that the mafia did, from the history of coming to America in the 1920s and Murder Incorporated and, you know, the five New York families and all the murder and death of the mob and the control of the construction industry and everything that they did, you know, the extortion, the gambling, the murder, if you added it all up, would it equal even 5% of the damage that Al-Qaeda did to America on 9/11? He said, absolutely not, Peter. If you looked at the collective villainy of the mafia, of organized crime in America, it wouldn't even begin to equal the damage to our country caused by those planes that hit those buildings. So we need to wake up. PeterLance.com is my website.
All right, fine. Well, we're out of time. Peter, God bless. The book, Triple Cross, an excellent read. Thanks much. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Hi, Phil here with WolfAutoGroup.com saying thanks for trading with us. We're excited to take your dust collecting or unused assets or valuables as down payments on the finest used trucks and cars in brand new Dodges, Chryslers, Fords, Suzuki's, Jeeps of your choice. I will trade for anything, even your skill or labor. Try me on. Great financing available on the balance. That's WolfAutoGroup.com, many locations for your convenience. Call Phil personally at 303-931-9096. It's 303-931-9096.
He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 10 through 13.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots, biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath.
RDS Environmental in Lafayette salutes all our area students and graduates for their accomplishments. With prom night and graduation right around the corner, sometimes common sense and safety get pushed aside. Parents, talk to your kids and remind them about the dangers of drinking and driving. That message courtesy of RDS Environmental at 1365 Forest Park Circle in Lafayette. Call 303-444-5253. That's 303-444-5253 for RDS Environmental in Lafayette, where Tammy and her staff are on the air because they care.
Well, Dr. Stan, this amazing, amazing story. I present it to you. We do have a fascinating DVD, or actually it's a video, that's been suppressed, actively suppressed, in the United States from 1994 until the year 2001. It could not be shown on television in America, where we have freedom of the press and freedom of speech, but it wasn't allowed to be shown here. From 1994 to 2001, because somebody gave an order. It was shown one time in 1994, but it is an amazing video. You remember Peter talked about a fellow named Assam. Assam was actually the man who organized Al-Qaeda. And you'll see him speaking in a mosque in Oklahoma in 1988. 1988 is the year before he's killed, and I've always thought the CIA killed him so that Bin Laden could take control of Al-Qaeda, because Bin Laden certainly had close ties to the CIA. Of course, they're going to deny that. But anyway, here the FBI is photographing Assam speaking in Oklahoma City at a mosque there in 1988 and calling for, you know, bloodshed and attack on America. So why is the FBI taking pictures of him? They were watching all of the Islamic terrorists. We financed this whole program. We financed the Taliban. We financed Al-Qaeda along with the Pakistanis and the Saudi Arabia. We created the best enemy money could buy. We actually put out $51 million for textbooks to train people in this radical form of Islam, which was non-existent, except for the Muslim Brotherhood and the Wahhabis in Saudi Arabia. It didn't exist until the CIA set out to create the best enemies money could buy. If you want, we have an article out of the Washington Post called The ABCs of Jihad, going into how America financed this Islamic terrorist movement. We carry a book called The Devil's Game. The Devil's Game. These are important. You need to get the video of the jihad in America, and you'll see the FBI talking about it. And this is in 1993 and 1994 about the Islamic threat, and the video was suppressed in America. We have it available. Jihad in America, one of the most important videos ever made, because they didn't want the American people to know until the attack came. We were going to go to war with the Islamic world, and ladies and gentlemen, that's what this whole spectacle over in Tehran is today, is to prepare the American people for going to war with Iran and eventually with the rest of the Islamic world. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can listen to our internet programs there. We need you to get the information and then help us to get it out across America. So we have so much going into the background of 9/11. Did you ever wonder why 1,100 bodies, American bodies, were vaporized that morning? They weren't crushed. They were vaporized. They disappeared. They've never found a fragment of them. How did that happen if the buildings pancaked? And the buildings didn't pancake. They were brought down by explosives. You need to get our four tapes out on why did the buildings come down. Why did the buildings come down? We have a four tape set on what really happened on 9/11. We hear Sergeant Lauro Chavez talking about, he was at CENTCOM headquarters that morning in Florida, September 11th. There was a stand-down order. There were all sorts of military exercises simulating planes crashing into buildings, but you're never going to hear that, and you'll never hear another interview with Lauro Chavez. He disappeared after our interview. Remember, 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Please pray. Would you have a day?
No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation grant letters of marque or reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit.